So the one common thread about telecommunications, or communications in general, is there's always controversy and scuttlebutt associated with it all throughout history. And not to forget about Mr. Al Gore, who invented the internet in 1983. Okay, look, we all know he didn't invent the internet, but he did support legislation that funded ARPA and DARPA, and actually helped create the infrastructure that brought us the World Wide Web. And he and his staff started to coin that term, information superhighway. So around the time that Al Gore, somewhere between Alexander Graham Bell and Al Gore, COMREX was looking at ways to leverage widely deployed communications infrastructures to help television and radio broadcasters do their job more efficiently and creatively. And so in the 60s, we came out with things like the first wireless microphone that was used by television on Broadway in the NFL. And then we were looking at things like VHF monitors and telephone interfaces. And our telephone autocoupler is, I still walk into television stations and I see them all over the place connected to really expensive POTS lines. I walked into one television station in Chicago, they had 32 of them that they used for IFB. That wasn't that long ago. I'm pretty sure they've gotten rid of them since then because they were paying $3,200 a month in phone bills just for IFB. But it's TV money, so it doesn't matter. So about 1983, we're still dealing with things like frequency extenders. And then after that, when we started to see that there was this thing called the internet, it seemed to offer a bunch of interesting possibilities. And little did we know, it would become the largest data infrastructure or communications infrastructure on the planet. But we don't necessarily associate it with communications as much as we do web browsing, shopping on Amazon, emails, and things like that. But it's really become something more than that, especially in 2010 with the development of WebRTC. So let's talk a little bit about WebRTC and where it came from. So in 2010, Google bought a little company called Global IP Solutions that had this cool little technology that used JavaScript and some new web browser code to develop a way of communicating between two browsers. It was pretty interesting technology to Google, so they took it to the Internet Engineering Task Force and the World Wide Web Consortium and basically presented it as an open source project, which meant that anybody had access to it and anybody could develop for it. So that was kind of the beginning. To push this along further, Ericsson Labs from Sweden said, we really want to see this thing work because it can really present some really interesting money-making opportunities for us and our cell phones. So they implemented a thing called a Bowser. Don't know exactly what the name means other than it takes the R out of a web browser. I don't know. That's just my guess. That's really bad. I got to stop telling that little stupid thing. First browser-to-browser video call happened in 2013. Now, I vaguely remember, I think it was Mozilla Firefox, had a little thing that was sponsored and paid for by Telefonica out of Spain that popped up and said, talk to a friend through our web browser, which I thought was kind of cool. You could actually create a link and send it to them. They could click on it and they would connect to your web browser. And then it kind of went away. So that was, I remember that, I used it, and it was pretty interesting. And it got more interesting when there was a data transfer that took place between web browsers, and more stuff was happening. 2014, Google started to implement WebRTC in Hangouts, which is now Chats, which is really annoying because, well, for a whole bunch of different reasons. But they kind of implemented it, but not fully. So they basically provided some text interface using the data channel, but they hadn't fully implemented video and voice yet. I think voice to some degree. So between 2014 and 2017, we started to see all of these conferences pop up, WebRTC developer conferences and stuff. So I got it. I'm in SBE. I'm a certified broadcast networking engineer. I'm kind of a nerd, but not really. Our nerds drug me along because they wanted me to learn about this WebRTC technology. And so we went to a bunch of these conferences. And I have to tell you, I mean, all the players were there. Apple was there, Microsoft was there, Google was there, Zeif, the parent company of Mozilla Firefox. And then you had Audio Codes, Sangoma, Digium, all of these people that make all of this hardware for unified communications. And they were all introducing little bits and pieces of the WebRTC puzzle. So we went to all these boring meetings, and I fell asleep through most of them. There was some interesting stuff, and I made some good contacts. But we decided that we would make a product that would utilize WebRTC because we thought it was a really interesting way for guests to call into a radio station. We're not going to talk too much about my product, but that's one of the reasons we got involved with it. So we actually released our first stable version and shipped our first units in 2018. So we've been kind of in the WebRTC sandbox for a little while. So WebRTC, it stands for, well, first of all, these are all the players that were involved initially in the consortium. Since then, it's no longer managed by Zeif, the parent company of Mozilla, or by Google. It's been turned over to the Internet Engineering Task Force and the World Wide Web Consortium. So it's truly an open source project that's not managed by one of these giant business behemoths. So WebRTC stands for Web Real-Time Communications. And essentially, it's three little data engines that live inside these common web browsers. So the reason I had that up there was to remind us that we've got Apple Safari, we've got Google Chrome, Microsoft Edge, Mozilla Firefox, Opera were some of the first to jump on board. Internet Explorer was supposed to have WebRTC compatibility, which if you think about it, Microsoft had just bought Skype, which I could get off on a completely other tangent because we had a product that did have an integration with Skype, and then they pulled the rug out from under us. I won't go down that path, but I really dislike Microsoft for that because like so many things, Microsoft is really good at buying technologies or technology companies and then completely destroying them. At any rate, Skype is okay. We'll talk a little bit more about Skype, but these are the guys that implement it. So WebRTC is three things, and it's all built into these common web browsers. It's an audio engine that's using audio coding algorithms like G.722 and Opus. It's a video engine, which employs VP8 and also H.264 encoding decoding. And it's also a data engine or a data channel, which basically, first of all, manages a peer-to-peer connection between web browsers, but it also does things like texting back and forth. It's a text engine. It also does provides for the ability to share screens and share files from a web browser. So instead of using a third-party app, as long as you have a web browser on your desk, you can communicate to one of the other 7 billion endpoints or web browsers on the planet, as long as it's the current version of the web browser and it supports WebRTC. For example, you can't expect to go to an Internet Explorer 9 web browser and get it to work because Microsoft announced that they will no longer support Internet Explorer. It's actually going to go the way of the Adobe Flash, scheduled sometime next June. So thank God, Internet Explorer and its huge amount of bloatware will just evaporate. So very happy with that. They've gone over to Edge because it's faster, more nimble, will allow for WebRTC communications. So what happens when you use WebRTC? Well, you go up to a web browser and you get a link from somebody, or there's a link embedded in a page, or a button embedded in the page, and you click on it, and it activates a little line of JavaScript, about 40 lines of JavaScript that are embedded into the web browser. That little line of JavaScript actually wakes up the engine that it wants to use, and it could be audio, video, the data channel. It definitely needs a data channel to establish that peer-to-peer communication. But then it does some other things. It uses STUN, simple traversal under utilities for networks, to get through firewalls and NATs. It also does an SSL certificate exchange, either through SSL server that you provide, or it could use like Let's Encrypt, which is a free open source, or just a free SSL certificate exchange server. It asks for permission to use your camera or your mic device, so it's actually working with your local, the web browser reaches out to the local hardware on your device and says, hey, they want to use the mic and camera on your device. Will you allow that? And you say yes. And then that peer-to-peer communication occurs after all that quick exchange happens, and then you're either seeing the person and talking to them back and forth, or you're texting back and forth, and it's magic through a web browser. There's no application you have to install. There's no special hardware. If you have a common web browser, it just works. It's magic. I guess a really good case in point of how easy this is to implement is something that we put on the Comrex webpage. If you go to comrex.com, as long as you have a modern browser, Safari, Opera, Chrome, Firefox, and what else? Maybe Puffin, there are some others. Vivaldi is another one. A little button will appear, and if you click on that button, it gives you some options. You can make a voice call or a video call to one of those little icons. Two of those icons are me, one is my good friend Raul, and it will basically send a little message to us and say, there's a customer that wants to talk to you about buying a lot of your equipment. So I certainly rush to it and hit that button and go, yes, buy, buy, buy. But I had a support call from a guy in an airplane today. His stations were off the air, and he couldn't get into his Bricklink, so I looked for him because I'm a nice guy. But he was able to do it through the web browser on an airplane, even though the airlines say, specifically, no voice or data calls while you're in flight. He was breaking the rules. Oh, well. But it's a nice little app that we stuck in there. I actually was able to get a little line of code from OnSIP, who is a voice over IP provider that Comrex uses. We have a bunch of accounts. So for free, I could put that code into our web browser, and it was just a line of code that long. Their API basically manages all this stuff and establishes the communication between me and the customer on our website. You may have seen this on other websites. You might see it on Amazon. You might see it on State Farm Insurance's website, because people are deploying these WebRTC solutions in their website. So, as we mentioned, the WebRTC application lives in the browser, and that API is basically provided in the web browser itself. And it's there so that third-party solutions providers or your coders can actually get in there and modify it for your specific needs on a web page. And then once that happens, it does things like media capture, taking control of your camera, of your microphone, and then encoding audio and video depending on what you have selected. And you might remember I have an audio button, I have a video button. And then there's also the transport layer. And it's also doing some other things like dynamically buffering the audio to make sure that it gets there. If you have some contention, it can throttle the encoder for the audio or video. So it's doing a lot of stuff in the background to make sure you have some reliable transport. But there are two different layers of transport that you can deploy. You can deploy a unreliable transport, which is basically just straight UDP without any kind of error correction for the lowest latency, or you can deploy a reliable layer, which uses some other stuff. There's even some talk about them deploying SRT in web browsers to make this even more reliable. So that's interesting. And then session management is all handled by the data layer, so that if you want to share your screen with something, that data channel is actually actively managing that, and the server in between is handling all that. You can kind of see the little thing that goes on there. It looks not unlike a SIP call, except it's doing the communication between the peers, reaching out to stun servers if it needs it. It's not using the old paradigm of you have a web browser and a server that you reach out, you get data from, or using that that server-to-server communication. It's actually web browser-to-web browser, so that makes it unique and much more nimble and much more modifiable. So a lot of people are like, oh, so it's just like Skype, right? It's nothing like Skype. In fact, Skype is using WebRTC technologies and implementing their web version of Skype. So the big difference between Skype and WebRTC is Skype is an application they have to install into your computer or have it already embedded into a device. WebRTC is a technology that is an open source technology that if you go to webrtc.org, you can see the constant updates to the technology and specification, and it can be deployed easily in third-party solutions by third-party vendors or by your own computer nerds if you've got them. So Skype must be on the user device, or if you're using Skype for web, it's actually using elements of WebRTC. And WebRTC is built into these common web browsers. As I said before, it's crazy because it's like 7 billion endpoints. There is not a device that doesn't have the capability of doing WebRTC. In fact, smartphones, if you've got Chrome, Safari, Puffin, Opera, Vivaldi, any of those, on your phone, you can actually do WebRTC on your smartphone. Crazy. Let's see what else we got here. Skype is owned by Microsoft, which comes with its own baggage and stuff. I won't say a lot more about that because I could, but I won't. WebRTC is open source, as we mentioned. Skype requires that the user have a registration in the app, but WebRTC is as simple as a link. That's a little encoded link. You click on it, you connect to another web browser. Bada boom, bada bing. Very simple. Now, Skype is a well-engineered product, and it's a little bit unfriendly for integration into a web browser or third-party solutions. Okay, little brief aside. We actually had integrated Skype into our telephone system, which was called Stack VIP. And after Microsoft bought Skype, and we basically had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars sending it back and forth to Estonia for approval and becoming a plugged into Skype partner, then Microsoft said, nope, sorry, not going to do it. But then you could be a part of the Skype professional program for another $600,000, $700,000, and we weren't invited. So, not a big Microsoft fan. Not that I'm bitter. I'm bitter. Moving on. So there is something that's interesting. Skype uses the Silk algorithm, which is one of the reasons why it doesn't necessarily sound too great, because it's kind of a bandwidth limited. It only goes to 7 kilohertz. WebRTC uses the Opus coding algorithm. And Opus is interesting because, well, remember how I said communications is all about controversy? Well, Opus is no different. Yes, sir. Oh, you needed the, okay. They need the sign. I need the sheet too, because I want to get my half point. Okay, so Opus is not without controversy because there are some intellectual property claims on the algorithm, or supposedly there were. We really like Fraunhofer IIS for AAC licensing. We've been using them for a long time. We love the AAC family of coding algorithms, but we really like open source stuff even more because we're not having to pay a licensing fee for every encoder that we put into a product. We still like AAC though, it sounds really good. Opus is interesting because it's like a Reese's peanut butter cup. It's two great tastes that taste great together. So it's actually using silk as part of the voice algorithm, and then it's using something called Celt. And it's a hybrid algorithm. So there's actually a little bit of AI in there, I guess is the only way to describe it. So it looks at the audio input source and it determines whether to use the bandwidth limited silk for voice, or if there is music or other higher bandwidth content or higher full spectrum content, it can actually use a combination of silk and Celt, and it kind of balances between the two. It's a pretty fascinating algorithm. And almost every single audio codec manufacturer on the planet, with maybe one or two exceptions, has put Opus into their devices. So that's an interesting little thing. Plus, you know, when Google puts it in their browser, as does Apple and Microsoft, I think we're okay. There's probably not going to be any more legal battles because they've got more attorneys than we do, so we don't have to worry about it. So if you look at how well Opus performs compared to some of the other licensable algorithms and algorithms that are in smartphones like AMR wideband and the AAC family and MP3, which I've never been a big fan of, especially for music, it basically spans the whole range of quality and bit rates. And there are constant bit rate versions of it. There are variable bit rate versions of it. So it's a very nice open source, royalty-free coding algorithm, which is why it's a great choice to put into web browsers for WebRTC applications, of which there are many, many, many. We've already talked about some of the web browsers that are supporting WebRTC, and even the mobile applications and mobile OSs that are supporting WebRTC. It is being well adopted by almost all of the major web browser manufacturers, smartphone manufacturers, etc. And if you think about the applications for it that are already using it or the markets are expanding for it, online education is a really big and important one, especially in this pandemic. I know that most of 2020, my daughter was at home in front of a computer instead of in a classroom, and they were using online education for her and her classmates. But also telemedicine, gaming is huge, and a lot of the smart speakers that we have in our homes are actually using certain aspects of WebRTC in those devices. So if you've used any of these applications, Google Meet, Hangouts, Chat, Facebook Messenger was one of the first to employ WebRTC, Snapchat, Discord, yada, yada, yada. All of these devices or all of these applications or all of these companies are using WebRTC because it's a web browser-facing application, little line of JavaScript, brings up the chat window or the video and audio engine, and off we go. And then broadcast is actually kind of lagging behind, but we jumped on it early because we saw the benefit for an easy way to get a guest or a caller on the air, sounding very good because, as we saw in the spectrum of the Opus coding algorithm, it'll do full bandwidth, 20 hertz to 22 kilohertz audio, and it'll sound really good. I wouldn't want to do a music show on it, but for voice, it's really good. Latency is very low, quality is really good. So talking about all these applications that are being used, I'm going to bring it down to you as I continue to talk. There are a lot of money makers that can be used. Gaming is probably one of the biggest ones, especially with the death and demise of, there you go, thank you. I got it. The death and demise of Adobe Flash. It's a really important technology to be able to share screens, data, share activities and games. But there are many, many ways that you can utilize this. Surveillance, even. and financial services. There are banks that actually now have little apps built into their web browser, or banks, like my Bank of America account. I'm always being nagged if I want to talk to Erica. That's WebRTC. I don't want to talk to Erica. I just want to see how much money I have in my account. But hey, it's there if we need it. And that pesky Comrex website, that little thing saying, talk to someone live now. It helps sometimes, but oh well. So when we're talking about these applications, and we've all watched national news programs with people on Zoom or on Skype or on something, how good is good enough? I mean, back in the radio days, if you back in the, I don't know, 90s, early 2000s, there were some broadcasters that if it wasn't on ISDN, it wasn't going to get on their air. They weren't going to put a phone call on the air because it didn't sound good. They still don't sound good. They sound worse in many ways. And video, unless you went to a flash studio or you went to, you know, like a television station that could get you a satellite uplink, they weren't going to put you on the air. But the audio quality and video quality that's acceptable on the air is so bad now, especially when using Zoom. So how good is good enough? Are these good enough? Are there things you can do to make it better? Of course there are. And I think that there are broadcast equipment vendors that need to figure out a way to harness this technology, not unlike ourselves, to make it better. But more so, there's some certain things you can do to make it better. First of all, turn off the automatic gain control. Especially if somebody is using the built-in speaker on their laptop or their computer, the AGC isn't going to do anything other than make it sound swishy and whirly as it chases all of the sound bouncing around the room. You can also turn off the echo cancellation because that's not going to be any better. Those are things that are chewing up the DSP on the computer, and it's actually making the audio sound worse than better. It's actually making it sound like it's actually sucking, not a voice coming out. So those are things you need to turn off. You can also turn off streaming apps, and I don't know how many times I've talked to customers about what they're doing at the same time that they're using one of our applications or one of our products. But I had walked into a group of stations in an undisclosed location, and he said, I don't know why I'm having a problem. I have a 15 meg metro Ethernet. And I went, oh, it's dedicated to just your access. He goes, no, it's for the building. I went, oh, okay. So your problem happens about the time you start uploading logs, traffic logs, and yes. I went, oh, okay. So yeah, turn those things off. Dedicate bandwidth specifically for the application. And that's one of the reasons probably that 9 times out of 10, audio breakup, video breakup on these Zoom calls is because there are other streaming applications, security cameras, IP phones, all on the same network. Setting up QoS or MAC address priority specifically for these applications or for products is important too. Keep the interface super simple. Someone said to me that everything needs to be as simple as Skype. I'm kind of a techie guy. I don't consider Skype simple, because you have to download the application, then you have to register it, then you have to go find somebody. It's not as simple as getting a link or a button or an app, hitting it and getting on the air. If you're used to Skype, it's great, but if you're, I don't know, my mom and I send her a Skype invitation, that could be days. And dedicated hardware and server for it as well. Those are important things. You have to educate your users when doing these things as well. They have to have realistic expectations as to how well it's going to work, and making sure that they do those things I mentioned. Make sure that your kid's not streaming Netflix while you're trying to do a live on-air broadcast from your den. Some other things that you can do, probably the most important, since we've turned off AGC, we've turned off echo cancellation, never, ever, ever, ever use the microphone on your computer. Never use speakerphone, because it's maddening. I don't know. Is anybody else bothered by watching, you know, these broadcasts where I'll tell you one funny thing. There was a bunch of celebrities got together. What was it called? Together at Home, where it was kind of like all these music celebrities were doing little concerts from their home studios and stuff. And it was across all three broadcast networks. This happened last year, I think. And Lady Gaga was the one that kind of put it together. And so she's in her home in a hallway with a brick wall on this side, in the hallway with a $12,000 Neumann Telefunken microphone. And I was going, wow, this is going to be great. Until I noticed that she was singing into the back of it. Because you could see the logo staring you right at the camera, and she's behind it. And I'm like, it sounds like she's singing from the mouth of a cave, which is essentially what she was doing. Oh, boy. Yeah, okay. If you have a $12,000 microphone, know how to use it, first of all. But definitely use a headset, use a good microphone, kind of like the guy up there in the upper left-hand corner. That's the kind of thing that you want the person using these technologies to do. Get a good headset. Get a good microphone. It could be a USB microphone. That's what we want. These ladies here, great. They have a full broadcast headset. It's going to sound great. It's not going to sound like, I mean, I've heard some of these Zoom conferences or the Zoom calls on the air that sound a lot like this on the air. That's not great. So that's a good idea. This young lady, too, she has a really good, it could be a Rode microphone, some prosumer headset, still what you want. You don't want earbuds out in the open. I mean, in a worst-case scenario, it's better than what this guy over in the lower left-hand corner. He's talking on a speakerphone. I don't like talking to somebody on the speakerphone when I'm on just a regular phone call. It drives me nuts. I had a support call 2 days ago with a guy. First of all, he had a really bad accent. I couldn't understand him. And second of all, he was talking across the room, and I couldn't understand what he was saying. So trying to put that on the air, good headset, good microphone, and that's what we want. So all of this to say, good in, good out, WebRTC is a really fascinating technology. We're going to see a lot of new applications and a lot of new services, whether they be a software as a service, service, media as a service, internet as a service, platform as a service, X as a service, all these things. And I know that all day yesterday, everyone was talking about Docker this, Docker that, virtual this, virtual that. But services, I think, are going to play an important part of how we broadcast. And hopefully we'll see other equipment manufacturers embracing WebRTC, coming up with ways for all of us to be able to benefit from them. And ultimately what we want is the listener and the viewer to benefit from these technologies. So the more work that broadcast equipment manufacturers put into these services and make them viable for broadcasters to use, the better it will be for all of us. It's already changing the way we do things now. It just needs to make its way into broadcast, and I think we'll start seeing that more and more. Oh, I just stuck this up there because I'm fascinated by 5G and all the radios and all the microcell stuff that they're putting up. I am constantly asked, so is Comrex 5G ready? And I usually say, well, 5G isn't even 5G ready, so I guess we're 5G ready as soon as it's available. There is a common misconception that 5G is here and it's fascinating and it's going to change our lives. Kind of like when 4G came out, it wasn't 4G, it was like 3.5G until they fully deployed all the data infrastructure that they needed, which was fiber instead of T1s and all that. So 5G needs lots of fiber. It needs a lot more data infrastructure before we can realize the full specification, which isn't even complete yet for mobile users. It's supposed to be completed, or Part 17 is supposed to be completed in 2024. So maybe after that, we'll start to see 5G services and speeds being utilized. I have a whole other thing I do about 5G, about what it is and what it isn't. We won't talk about that, but I still I'm still constantly bombarded with questions about 5G and if our stuff will work on it. My guess. Okay, anyway, moving on. So those are my comments on WebRTC, and hopefully I didn't take up too much of your time. I am not a full-blown expert on WebRTC, but if you have questions, I'm happy to tell you what we're doing, or it depends. I guess it depends on who's providing it. I think that's what a lot of businesses are looking to do, is instead of, broadcast manufacturers are starting to creep into that monthly service model, monthly service fee model. And to be honest, I mean, we're starting to look at some of that stuff as well. But if you're paying for it, it had better be good. Otherwise, it won't last long. I mean, there are some companies that are doing that already. IPDTL is one that comes to mind. They have basically a WebRTC interface, and you pay monthly for their service, and it works okay sometimes. But, you know, our product is a little bit different, our Opal product. IPDTL requires that you connect into a server through in London, and so there's a little bit more lag time in terms of the handshake and so forth and management. Our Opal device is actually a web server itself. So it's kind of it's a media server and a handshake server at the same time. So there's just one point of connection, and then all the stuff is done in the background. So it's a little bit different. Yes, sir.
Thanks for stepping through the WebRTC in little bite-sized chunks. I took a little note here, how you talked about how the JavaScript wakes up the engine, and then you traverse whatever your outside connection is to get to the outside world, your firewall. Then you talked about SSL certs. Is that the entirety of encryption is what I'm getting at. Is the SSL kind of the entire encryption, or is there another additional layer of encryption to make that connection between your two end client/server devices?
As far as I know, the SSL secures the page, and then all the transport stuff is buried deep inside from there. I don't know if there's any other, I don't think there is any additional encryption other than that. So as far as I know, WebRTC is fairly robust in terms of being secure, which is why one thing that I didn't talk about is how in unified communications enterprise scenarios, you start to see WebRTC deployed with gateways and session border controllers so that they can interface WebRTC with their existing SIP-based, VoIP-based telecommunication system. I kind of like playing with FreePBX, which is Asterisk-based or FreeSwitch-based, and there's actually a module in FreePBX for a WebRTC gateway. And essentially all that does is it acts as a translator between WebRTC's coding algorithms and whatever's being used by the phone system. Maybe it will transcode down to G.711 or G.722A or G.29A or whatever. But gateways and session border controllers are used for those. It's a really interesting way if you're an enterprise scenario where you have a fully blown IPPBX and communication system for communicating within multiple offices or within your offices. It's a way for your users to connect to the outside world and vice versa without having somebody put a piece of an application or software on their computer. They just need a web browser. So that's interesting. But security, I think, is primarily handled by SSL. Our device actually has a little window in there because we have a lot of university and, governmental agencies that don't like having to use Let's Encrypt. So they want to use their own SSL server within their own domain, and so you can do that. So You don't have to just depend on Let's Encrypt, which is, I don't want to say sketchy, but it's free for the world. Maybe you control your own certificates.
How much bandwidth should people allocate for it to be a good, reliable signal?
So the nice thing about WebRTC applications, and especially using Opus, the browsers have the full library of Opus in it. So it goes down to probably a really crunchy 18 kilobits all the way up to 128 kilobits. I know in our device, we actually kind of narrow that down. So it's like between 48 and 128. We just kind of increased the bandwidth to 128 kilobits. So if you have a good network, it'll scale up to that. Bump the encoder up. I would say, for the most part, 128 kilobits, 256 kilobits worth of data, it's not a whole lot for audio. Video is a little bit more. It's using H.264, so I think the sweet spot for that using WebRTC is probably in the maybe 4 megabits per second range if you want HD. But it'll get, just like all of the WebRTC solutions that are out there, and even Skype and Zoom, which uses aspects of WebRTC, but not really, because you have to put that application on your computer. Their video can be pretty crunchy, pretty blocky. So we're probably talking probably a meg worth of video, and it gets a little blocky. Does anybody have any WebRTC applications on their website for the stations or anything like that, or considering? Because it goes beyond just, a website. There are OTT applications that are using it as well. I think even Netflix, if you use it through, on a web browser, not like downloading the app on a smartphone, but they're starting to deploy some WebRTC stuff. So creating a WebRTC application for a station website could be interesting for, listening to live audio or, looking at a live broadcast if you wanted to, or even interacting with station personalities or fun stuff like that, even if it's just text-based. So there's a lot of applications for live broadcast even. And there are companies that will take your money to develop it. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's fun. It's fascinating. I guarantee you, the next time you're on the web, you're going to start going, I wonder if that's WebRTC. And you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised how much stuff you see that you didn't know that was there before. And it's pretty cool stuff. Even if I must say so myself. If you do the, I can't remember what it is. Yeah, you can actually look at the element, and you could see what, if it's opening up a line of JavaScript, a lot of times you can see the JavaScript code in there, and that's a good indicator. And a lot of that stuff is kind of buried in the WebRTC API. But if you're looking at a common web browser, whether it's Google Chrome, Mozilla Firefox, Safari, Microsoft Edge, Vivaldi, Opera, all those guys, they all, if it's up to date, they all are WebRTC capable, and more are becoming. So if you see a button on there that you click and it opens up a window, that's more than likely, and I can say this with a pretty good deal of confidence, it's more than likely WebRTC because it's certainly not Flash. You cannot believe how many calls Comrex got on January 13th, 2020, when Flash stopped working in all the web browsers. I can't get into my codec. Oh, so did you update the firmware so it supports HTML5? Because, we've been talking about it for 2 years. Oh, no, I didn't know about that. I actually had a call today, the guy from the airplane. Couldn't get into his BrickLinks because they hadn't been updated since 2017. Okay. All right. He apparently missed all the... Yeah, that's all right. Yes, that's how you know. I mean, it's really kind of the dominant unified communications for smartphones and stuff. And I don't know if you... Hey, let's go back. Just for Tony. Because I like Tony. Okay. You can see...
So my single biggest pet peeve when you see people using Skype or Zoom calls or whatever, if they're doing a multi-voice, right, where they've got an in-studio host and two or three guests, and there's a guest that they haven't talked to for 20 or 30 seconds, and they come back to them, and that guest starts talking, and their AGC has been ramped all the way up, so they completely blow the speakers out of everything until it clamps down on them and brings them back down to level again. How many times do they have to hear this to, make a simple correction?
Use a headset.
Yeah, and turn off your AGC.
Turn off the AGC, turn off the echo cancellation. Those are the things that really make the audio really, really, really bad. Yes, I can tell Tony is a fellow codec nerd. Because we're in the business of making people sound better, not worse. And so it's kind of like nails on a chalkboard to us when we hear somebody on a crappy cell phone or we hear somebody using, just an open speakerphone mic, and it's just, ah.
I watch this stuff and I wonder why you have, on these news shows, you have the same guest over and over again, talking heads, and why the networks don't package up something and send it out to them when you know they're just using a laptop, some kind of codec and in the mics and a decent set of IFB earphones or
earbuds. It's funny you mention that because Comrex has a really nice product designed specifically to do just that. You don't have to send out anything other than a $50 headset. Tell them to plug it into their computer. And then you send them a link, they click on it, opens up this web page, they hit the connect button, and it already has the built-in, mix minus for them locally, so they don't have to worry about that. Just as long as from the studio, you've got like audio, analog in, analog out, or AES3 in and out, you just send a mix minus to the guest, and you're laughing. And it sounds like they're in the studio.
As far as a mic, just send them a list and send them to the Guitar Center or something.
There's a really nice little cost headset. It's $50. I've got a Sennheiser, I think it's called a C39 headset, $70. A very small investment to give your, and here's another, I'll give you another pet peeve, Tony, to improve the quality of the content on the program. So I was listening to the Sean Hannity show, driving in my truck, and Donald, this was a couple years ago, Donald Rumsfeld was on, and I wanted to hear because he had a book coming out, and it was like I couldn't hear him because he had his phone like this buried in his neck. You could tell that he probably had a scotch in one hand and leaning back in the limo and trying to sell his book, but I'm not going to buy the book if I can't hear what he's talking about, right? First of all, he's calling on a crappy cell phone. Second of all, it's buried in his throat. Apparently, he didn't care enough about selling his book and reaching the listener. So that's my pet peeve. If you care enough about selling something to listeners, give them the best quality that you can and the best representation so people can hear you. I was leaning into the radio thinking that was going to help because I wanted him to...
Sometimes you listen to talk radio or a call or something, you can tell when somebody's using a traditional landline versus a cell phone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even that's good. That's better.
The old copper line is still better.
So here's another pet peeve. Everybody has, is there anybody that still uses like a flip phone? Anybody has a bag phone? Oh, they shut that service off. But, everybody seems to have a modern smartphone, whether it's an iPhone or an Android. And the crazy thing is, we have really high-quality audio coding algorithms in these devices. If it's a new one, you have one called EVS. You've got AMR wideband, AMR narrowband. A lot of times you've got AAC. You've got all these great coding algorithms in there. And part of the 4G LTE specification is something called voice over LTE. And for years, we were like grousing at Verizon to basically open that up. And they were like, well, you know, it needs to be equal access and blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, if somebody can pay for it, that's equal access. Oh, no, 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 it has to be part of the, well, finally, they've opened it up. So if you have a Verizon phone and you call somebody with an AT&T phone, you'll notice that the audio quality is actually pretty decent. You can hear the highs, you can hear the lows. It's not that really tinny, narrow band, 3.5 kilohertz, bandwidth limited, make your ears bleed kind of audio quality. It's 7 kilohertz. It's G.722 or better, which is cool. But I just wish we could get that on the air. We can't, because the cell phone companies are so, they've got blinders on unless they can sell hundreds of thousands of subscriptions, they're not going to make it broadcast capable, which drives me nuts. That's a whole different pet peeve. But won't that be nice? And that's another reason why WebRTC is probably a more fascinating way to use it. You can send somebody a link on their smartphone, they can click on it, they've got the web browser that also has, you know, the Opus coding algorithm and higher quality coding algorithms. So you can make them sound like they're in the studio and not, you know, calling from the mouth of a cave like Lady Gaga on her $12,000 microphone. Sorry, I didn't mean to make that sound too bitter.
Why did Microsoft decide to buy Skype, or want to, how was it in their interest to buy Skype?
Why did they decide to buy Skype?
Didn't Microsoft do that? Is that what you said?
Yeah, they did. I mean, I think, they did it before, those wheels were in motion before 2010, as I recall. Well, maybe about the same time. I don't think they really foresaw WebRTC taking as wide of a hold as it did across all the platforms, all of the browser platforms. So, I mean, engineering-wise, it looks really good. And they could integrate it into their web browsers and their platform. I don't know what they were thinking, but they were probably thinking, we can be like Apple. We can have our own proprietary little communications tool. And it can only be in our ecosystem. And that was probably their thing. That's probably the other reason why they pulled the plugged into Skype thing, because they wanted to narrow the focus and make it, you know, they're Microsoft. They can do whatever they want, and they did. Yeah, but, you know, it's still a well-engineered platform. I don't think I've had a Skype call with anyone for 5 years, maybe. I have some animus that's driving me, like cost me a lot of money, so I'll probably never use. I'm a Mac person now, but I still have some Windows computers, unfortunately, that killed my ASI sound cards the other day. More animus, Microsoft. Okay, I better have a cocktail before I start really telling you what I think about Microsoft. Okay, well, thank you very much. If there are no more questions, you can meet me at the bar and you can ask me in person.